So we're going to turn to page 68.
Perfect.
That's exactly. Okay. And we're up to Tuf Mem Tes, which is the equivalent of 449.
Got it.
And that Siman only has one Seif. And then we can go on to 450, which is a little bit longer.
No pressure.
So we're talking about chametz that could be found in a store that's owned by a Jew, but the workers themselves are not Jewish. So let's see what the mechaber
is. All of our supermarkets in America.
Chanus shel Yisrael. So we're talking about a store that's owned by a Jew. Umalai. That the word malai means, as the Rambam points out, the schora. Everything that's inside the store, all the merchandise, all the klei chanus. That means all the machinery or whatever equipment is inside the store, Shel Yisrael, is owned by a Jew. And Upolim anichnasim l'sham einam Yehud, but the workers, the employees, are not Jewish. And now, amongst the included in the schora, in the merchandise that's in the store, is chametz. So therefore, the mechaber says, chametz shenimtza sham achar pesach asur b'hanah, that we apply the principle of chametz shavalav pesach because the merchandise is owned by the Jew. You know, it's the fact that the polim are goyim, that's not going to be relevant. We had a whole bunch of Mishnah Berurahs here, but I guess they can go.
I will get one for him.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, is this it? No. No.
So we're talking about the schora. The schora that's in the store is owned by the Jew. Now, it could be that the Poland brought in chametz into the store. So how can we be sure in this case whether the chametz belongs to a Jew or whether it belongs to a goy? The employees are non-Jews. So the mechaber says that we have some sort of an assumption here that since we know that this store was selling chametz and that chametz was clearly owned by a Jew, then if we have doubts as to whether or not the chametz that we find here in this store is part of the original schora, you know, the merchandise that's being sold, or does it belong to the employees, we're going to have to assume in this case of doubt that it belonged to the Jew. And we'll see why as we go through the Mishnah Berurah. But let's finish with the mechaber. Chanus shel einu Yehudi, umalai shel einu Yehudi, Upolim anichnasim l'sham Yisrael. So we have a store that's owned by a non-Jew, and the merchandise within the store is owned by the non-Jewish owner, but the polim, the workers that go into that store and work there, are Jews, are Yisraelim, and now you find chametz shenimtza sham mutar. We have no reason to assume that chametz belongs to any of the employees, any of the Jews who work there, but rather we assume it belonged to the employer, meaning to the owner of the store, and therefore there's no chametz over the pesach.
What form is that chametz in? Is it a piece of loose chametz, or is it like the other merchandise?
We're talking about
in the
a piece of bread. You know, he sells bread in the store.
Okay.
The employees bring in their own bread into the store. Now you find the piece of bread. You don't know whether it belongs to the shelves or that it's part of the merchandise. So we always assume that the bread belongs to the owner of the store. That goes both l'chumra and l'kula. In the ratio, we said that we're going to go l'chumra. We're going to assume since the store was owned by a Jew, it must be, again, we're going to have to go into detail why, we assume that the chametz that we find in the store is owned by the Jew. In the case where the sefer that the store is owned by a non-Jew, Then we assume, despite the fact that there are Jewish workers who bring in their chametz, we can assume that any chametz that we find there belongs to the owner of the store. And he says, afilu b'achila, because when chametz shavuot of Pesach, you have a lesser Yisr, which is called Hanah, and the most severe primary Yisr is achila. He says, even as far as the primary Yisr is concerned, we definitely have rights to assume that this chametz belonged to the guy. Kachi girsas Rashi v'Rabbeinu Hai. So up until this point, we thought things were pretty clear, and we had no issues. Everything belongs to the owner of the store, which is again in the case of the Reisha Lechumra, because it's owned by a Jew. In the case of the Sefer Lekula, it's owned by a guy. This is the Gemara in Pesachim Adaf Lamed Aleph. Avo Rabbeinu Chananel Goreis Behepech. According to the Girus of the text of Rabbeinu Chananel, it's exact opposite. We go by the majority of people who go into the store, not by the owner of the store. The majority of the people who go into the store are the Poalim, and therefore in the ratio we're going to be able to be makil according to Rabbeinu Chananel, because we're going to assume that even though the store is owned by a Jew, but the Poalim who go in there are non-Jewish, the chametz is assumed to be owned by a non-Jew. And the opposite is true in the safe. Let's just, Rabosa, if you don't mind, let's hold off our questions just so we get a picture of what's going on. So if it's okay with you, let's go through the Mishnah Berurah, and hopefully he'll clarify. And what he doesn't clarify, then we'll try to see if we can work it out on our own. So Perish, Haschora. Pas v'yayin v'chiyai gavna. So he's got merchandise that he's selling. It's a supermarket of sorts. He's selling wines, he's selling breads. He says that the word polim, he has a general meaning. It can mean one of two things. It can include both the employees that work in the store, or he has employees that work behind the counter and they try to encourage sales. But in any event, they go in and out of the store, and now the store is owned by a Jew. Aser bano. Why? Why do we assume, that's what the Mishnah Berurah is trying to address now, why do we assume that any chametz that we find in this store belongs to the Jewish owner of the store? It's part of the schora rather than part of the personal chametz that's owned by the Pole. He says, the talinon shechametz zeh shel chanus hu. We assume that this chametz that we found belongs to the category of merchandise. Velomi Paulim, it's not the personal chametz that was brought in by the workers. Af Shehem Regilim Shon, even though they go in and out there. Mishum deha chametz shebachanus hu kavua shom vitadir. And therefore, again, we'll explain what that means, kavu and tadir. Utfe yesh litlos shanisha shomei chametz shalo. Okay. So Mishnah Berurah is adding a whole bunch of things to this, to the picture that we have. In other words, our picture here of this Simon was very much incomplete. Point number one. This chanus is called kavua. What does kavua mean? There are two ways of formulating a suffix, a doubt. One way is to look at an object and ask yourself where it came from. The other is to look at an object and ask not where did it come from, but where did you find it? The place in which you found it. For example, if I walk out of a store, and I don't know which store I went into, then what I'm asking is on the store itself. Where and what was the nature of the store that I went into? So I'm looking at this store, and I'm asking, what was this store? There's another case where I find something outside the store, and I want to know, well, which store did it come from, assuming that there were many stores. So the first case is called kavua. Kavua means I'm looking at something that's stationary, that's in its place, this chanus, and I don't know what the status, what the nature of this chanus is. Now, according to the Mishnah Berurah, we're not going to look at this chametz that we find as if we found it outside of the chanus, and we're asking, well, did it come from the chanus? That's not our issue. But rather our issue is this part of the chanus or not? So since I found it in the chanus, that's called kavua. That gives me the, shall I say, the responsibility or the obligation to consider that this belongs to the chanus. It doesn't belong to the people who enter into the chanus, but rather it belongs to the chanus itself. And in this case, who owns the chanus? Don't I'll answer once. Who owns the chanus in this first case?
The Jew.
The Jew. Okay, good. Then he adds another point, and that is tadir. Tadir means that although on occasion people bring in chametz from the outside, like the employees who are non-Jews, but nevertheless, that's only on a temporary basis. But what's in the chanus on a regular constant basis, that is the merchandise that's being sold. And that's called tadir. We have two indications, or shall we say two heavy variables that point us in the direction of assuming that this chametz belongs to the Jewish owner. Number one, it's kavua. Number one is the fact that we're asking about the chanus. And number two, tadir, the fact that all the merchandise going into the chanus is going to be there on a regular basis, on a permanent basis. And therefore, we're going to go on now to the third assumption, and that is that the owner of the store made a bedika. Now you and I might think, well, why is he making a bedika? And the answer is that since he knows that at some point he was bringing chametz in, he was selling chametz as merchandise, he has to make sure that there's no chametz left, because that chametz is chametz that he owns. Now you might ask, well, he's not going to live in the house, he's not going to eat in the house, why are we worried about, why not just make bittul and get rid of the chametz, and it's not mine? But the answer is that when you leave your house, or any house, within a very short period of time, before Pesach, that's up to 30 days, I don't know if you were with me when we discussed this, then you're chayv in bedika, even if you move out of the house. You have to find yourself a Mishnah Berurah, because we ran out, so see if you can find it.
Kaylee Kay. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, he's very good at this, Yitzhak. He knows the library very well. He's one of our old-timers. Okay, so now the premise is, says the Mishnah Berurah, that he already did his bedika. Now, if he already did his bedika, what do we usually assume when a person does a bedika? Does he find the chametz or does he not find the chametz? Total answer once.
He finds
the chametz. We have no reason to assume that he didn't find the chametz. No, if he found the chametz during the bedika, now let's say the bedika was Erev Pesach, so at what point did this chametz enter into this chanus? It must have been after the bedika. Well, who would have brought chametz in after the bedika? Would have been the non-Jewish worker. So therefore, you would ask, why should we assume that this chametz that we find in the store belongs to the owner of the store, which means he missed it during the bedika? Why not assume that he found all the chametz during the bedika? And any chametz that now is found is because of a different source, not because of the chametz that's the schorah, as we called it, but rather the chametz that was brought in by the non-Jew. So the Mishnah Berurah has really complicated the situation here by introducing bedika. You know, if you would have assumed that there was no bedika, then again, you want to know, where did the chametz come from? And the answer is, it's schorah. That's a very logical possibility.
Right.
But if there was bedika, then he would have cleared out all his chametz.
But not schorah. That he might cover.
I don't think he could cover it unless he sells it to a guy. We're not talking about mechira here. You know, mechira is way later on. What we're talking about here is bedika. Bedika means that he's got to get rid of his chametz. Again, whenever the chacham require bedika, you can't just cover over your chametz. You know, that's good for mechira's chametz, but we're talking about bedika's chametz. Now, I think what he's assuming is that the store is closed for business during Pesach, or at least as far as chametz is concerned, they're certainly not selling any chametz. I mean, that would be an outright violation of two lavim. And immediately after Pesach, they find chametz in the store. Now, we thought that since he made a bedika, let's rely on the bedika. He did a very good bedika. And now any chametz that came in, it was the workers who brought in chametz afterwards. The only problem is that the store was closed during Pesach. The workers came in after Pesach, but he finds chametz immediately after Pesach. So it comes out according to the Mishnah
Brura. That's before or after the workers came in?
Well, I don't know if it's before or after. Let's assume before, just to make life easy for ourselves. But within a short period of time, that there's no massive amount of, you know, in other words, again, you know, maybe in the lunchtime they'll bring in their sandwiches, you know, for a lunch break. I don't know, but let's say even before that happens. So you see, you want to underline, again, you can't underline it because it's not your Mishnah Berurah, but if you had your own Mishnah Berurah, you would underline the words Matzah Tekef Achar HaPesach, which means that there was no interval of time that would allow for chametz to come in from the employees. And therefore, we have to assume that this was part of the Schorah. I made a Bedika. Okay, he made a Bedika, but it wasn't what we call a foolproof.
It could have also been that he had chametz which he on the shelves, right? And there was this same thing, let's say product A, which is on this shelf.
Yeah.
He's not going to burn that or throw it out. He's going to sell that to the guy. But somehow or other, a box of that chametz, they had 10 boxes on the normal place. One box was put somewhere else by somebody else.
Right. And guess what? It's his chametz, and he didn't find it during the week.
Right.
Now he finds it immediately after Pesach. So since, again, this is chametz found in the chanus, we assume, therefore, kavua, that it came from the chanus. Not only that, the chametz is always kavua, as opposed to the temporary entering of chametz by the employees. So we have two reasons to assume that this chametz is part of the schorah and it's not being brought in by the pole. That's as far as the reisha is concerned. Then we get to the sefer. The sefer, the chanus is owned by whom? By the god. It's owned by the non-Jew. And once again, we're going to assume that it's the schorah, and therefore we're going to allow you to benefit from that chametz. And it's mutar afilu b'achila, says the Mishnah Berurah Ratzalomar, afilu b'haya chanus sagur kol yimei pesach. Now watch what's going on here. For some reason, again unbeknown to us, I cannot justify this, but you know, the halach has to address every reality, and in this case the chanus was closed for Pesach. Why? Maybe the guy has a chain of stores, of supermarkets. One of them is in a very Jewish neighborhood, so he closes it for the balance of Pesach, right? I'm just giving you a possibility. Again, for whatever reason, he closed this, John Paul Jones, locked up and closed his supermarket during Pesach. No. If he closed the supermarket during Pesach, then you might want to assume that it's not the Jewish workers who are bringing in chametz, right? Because again, the store is owned now by a guy. He says the lekel of mitle shanochri balachanusim shom chametz ever Pesach. He's saying that during the course of Pesach, no chametz went in. So we're talking about chametz that was there before Pesach. Hava mina sheish lochus litlo shachametzim shashal apolin. Right. In other words, since there was no new schorah that was brought in during the course of Pesach, which obviously would have been brought in by the owner of the store, not by the Jewish Poalim, but we're now talking about chametz that was there before Pesach, because the store was closed during the course of Pesach, is therefore I have a logical, compelling reason to assume that this chametz came from the Poalim. And in this case, since the Poalim are Jews, we have a problem here. If the Jew left a piece of chametz and he owns that chametz and he left it in the supermarket, it might be chametz shalvu l'Pesach. Again, there's a strong reason to say that this is not schorah, because there hasn't been any schorah there for a week. And why not assume that whatever chametz you find was brought in by the Poalim who were working there, the Jewish Poalim, before Pesach? We're still going to assume that it's Schora. He had Schora before he closed for Pesach. There was no new Schora that came in after Pesach. Any chametz that you find was part of the Schora that was there before Pesach. And all this is according to Rashi and Rabbeinu Haigon. But now we go on to Rabbeinu Chananel. And if you remember, Rabbeinu Chananel changes everything around. Says the Mishnah Brura, to who savar, this is four lines up before the end on the right column, number hey, according to the opinion of Rabbeinu Chananel, talina yoser behapoalim shemitzuyim sham tamit. In other words, although the schora is there, but the schora is only there on a temporary basis. It's only there until it's sold. So schora, there's always a, what we call in English a turnover, if you're familiar with that word, right? A turnover. You know, today you're selling this thing, tomorrow you're selling something else because this got sold. So with regard to, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, with regard to the schora, schora is not something reliable. It's here today and gone tomorrow. Mashenki the Polim, who are constantly working, you know, they're there for, let's say, 8 hours a day in the store, they bring in their sandwiches, is that's called matsuri. That means it's more common, and it's their tamud. So matsuri doesn't describe the schora, but rather describes the chametz that's brought in by the polim. And that's called matsuri in the sense that it's constantly being brought in. And in the case of tamid, we're going to also say that instead of using the word tamid as we did in the Rashi's Girsa to describe the schora, we're going to shift the word tamid from the schora over to the polim. Since the polim are constantly going in and out, that's enough to be considered tamid. And this is going to have tremendous implications, because according to Rabbeinu Chananel, since the polim have the advantage of being mitsuyim, and not only that, they're tamid, as opposed to the schora which comes and goes, it's on the shelf one day and it's gone the next, we're going to always assume that this chametz came from the polim. Well, if that be the case, then let's go back to the Reisha and the Sefer. The Reisha, we said the store is owned by whom? By a Jew. You could be Mekel now and assume the chametz belongs to the guy, the polim. In the Sefer, since the polim are Jews, we're going to have to assume the Chumra that the chametz is chametz shavu l'va Pesach. Says the Mishnah Berurah, how do we paskin? L'inyan dina naktina kedeya kamaisa. What does kedeya kamaisa mean? The first opinion. Deya Kamaisa means the first opinion. The first opinion is the opinion of Rashi, and that's the opinion that the Mechaber brings down at the beginning of the Siman, and therefore we go Basar, the owner of the Chanus, meaning when there's a battle here, did the Chametz come from the Chanus, meaning the Schora, or did the Chametz come from the Polim? We're always going to assume the Chametz came from the Schora. The Schora is considered Kavua, as we discussed at great length, and the Schora is considered Tomid. And now he has another Shita here that disagrees with the Machaber, and that's the Bach and others. They assume that there was never a Machlokas. Velo ka'amri dea basraisa ela b'kagon, that the Rabbeinu Chananel only disagreed in the following scenario. Shalo hoya b'chanus mine mazon rak shar schoros. In other words, that we're talking about an appliance store or a furniture store. We're talking not about a store that sells pass, which was, again, if you remember the Mishnah Berurah number Aleph, that was the assumption we were working with. According to the Bach, forget about that. We're talking about a chanus that was selling shar schoros, other things, not edibles, not food stuff, but other non-food stuff. Selling bicycles, right? Vehicles. Avolim hoya b'chanus mini mazon. If, on the other hand, there was food being sold, it's a supermarket, not a furniture store. Gam l'deya zu, even according to Rabbeinu Chananel, basar chanus azlinon, we always assume that what we're finding in the store is schora, is the merchandise being sold. Why? Because chametz sham, the chametz there in the chanus, meaning the merchandise, is kavua v'tadir. Okay. So up until this point, we have a discussion about chametz that's found in a store. There's an owner of the store, and there are polim. The owner of the store might be a Jew, and the polim goyim. The owner of the store might be a goyim, and the polim are Jewish. Now the Mishnah Berurah decides that he wants to address a different question. Chametz shenimtza achar haPesach. Now, normally, if you find chametz in your house after Pesach, you know that it was your chametz. But here's a unique case. Lo yadinan im shal akamu o shal Yisrael. Let's say, for example, you find a package of chametz in the street after Pesach. Again, you and I would say, who would be interested in picking up that package? Just throw it in the garbage, throw it in the rubbish, right? But no, we're talking about an expensive piece of chametz, it's a whiskey bottle, whatever it might be, and now we don't know who owned this whiskey bottle. Again, well, let's assume there's no simon on it. You know, it's a merchandise that's sold in mass production. You know, there's no way you can identify who the owner is. It doesn't have a button payas on it, right? So we don't know if it's owned by a Jew or not. You know, it doesn't have the name of anyone on it. So he says the following: Yesha Kosv, according to one school of thought, Mutar Ba'anah V'yosav Achila, will be able to be Mekil as far as Hanah is concerned. You can sell it, but we're not going to allow you to eat it. V'yesh Mekilim, according to another school of thought, Gam Ba'achila Mutar. Now, how many people live in the city? Let's just take a number. Anybody want to just suggest a number? Just throw out a number that comes into your head. 100 people live in the city? 100 people. Very small town. 51 of them are goyim. And the Torah says that whenever you don't know, you rely on rov. In this case, the rov is goyim. And not only that, but chametz shavuah of a Pesach is only derabbanan. So even in the absence of rov, we have a principle that says sofek derabbanan le kula. So he says, yesh mekilim, there are those who have mekil. And they say, let's treat chametz shavuah Pesach exactly as we would treat a sofek derabbanan, lekula. And if that be the case, then it all depends upon the makeup of the city. If we could determine that the makeup of the city is non-Jewish, predominantly, then we can say sofek derabbanan lekula. If, on the other hand, it's a Jewish town, in Ba'oso Makom Rov Yisrael Mitzuyin, here we're not sure if we can use the principle of Sofek Derabbanan Lekula. Because Sofek Derabbanan Lekula means in a Sofek Ashokul, 50-50, meaning there's no Hachra, there's no way of determining based on Rov. But here, even in case of a Derabbanan, if we have Rov Yisrael, then there's reason to assume that this Chametz came from a Jew. And if it came from a Jew, it's
also... But the Jews are careful not to have Chametz on Pesach.
Excellent. So he says the following, that it all depends when you found the chametz. Do you find the chametz, do you assume that the chametz is new chametz, or can you assume it's old chametz? Now, again, which way would go lekula? If this was just placed here now, is that a factor lekula or lechumra? Does that tell me it was dropped by a guy or by a Jew?
By a guy.
Correct, by a guy. Why? Because the Jews are not dropping down chametz packages. So he says the following: Kol zekshen nimtza. Why are we going to go bust a rov? And we're going to assume it was lost by a Jew. That's only miyad achar pesach. Osha pas yosham. She efshal loma she nefa achar pesach. Avol im efshal litlo she nafal achar pesach. In other words, if we can assume that this bread was baked during the course of Pesach and then it fell. And let's say you found it right after Pesach, and then it's always mutter. Why? Because then Yoseh Yesh Litlo Shemiachra Pesach Shu Nitle Lomar Shu Misha Nitle Lomar Shem Yisrael Nafar Kodama Pesach. So again, you know, when are we going to assume that it's old chametz? When does the scenario indicate that it's new chametz? And it's very significant since this is a Jewish neighborhood. If we assume that this is old chametz, again in inverted commas, old chametz meaning that it was there already from before Pesach, then since most of the occupants or most of the people who walk the streets here are Jewish, then we have every reason to assume that this was a Jewish piece of bread. But if, on the other hand, we assume it's new chametz, and right after Pesach you found chametz that just arrived on the scene, it was probably baked just a day ago or a week ago in the last period of time, which was Pesach, then it's not Jewish bread. So how do we know whether or not this bread is old bread that fell here, Echvesmus, from before Pesach, or it's new bread that just recently got dropped here?
You can tell by how dry or something that bread is. It's not.
So let's just read the Mishnah Berurah, and then Mel will use your svara. Okay, just first the Mishnah Berurah, and then we're going to use your svara. We're going to plug in your svara. He says the following. Did you find the chametz immediately after Pesach? If you found it immediately after Pesach, then you're not going to assume. He says the Efshal Lomar. He actually gives two criteria. He says the following: why do we assume that it fell? And again, it's a little bit difficult for me to explain this because he's assuming, which I don't know exactly why, the Mishnah Berurah assumes that Pesach is like one one entity. It's you're not going to break it down into its component parts, that it's seven separate days. We see it as one entity. And he says the following, that if you find the chametz, and either it looks old, or you found it immediately after Pesach, then if we look at Pesach as one entity, then we assume that the chametz was there before Pesach. Now again, in the case of old chametz, meaning you look at it and you see it's got cracks and crevices, it's already on the, you know, it's already very, very stale or on the way to becoming stale, then you know it's what he calls pas yoshan. Right? And if it's pas yoshan, then we have to assume that it fell from Yisrael because Rov Yisrael. But if on the other hand, he gives a case of nimtza miyad achar Pesach, so I don't know what he means by this. Does he mean that all the bakeries are closed on Pesach? I'm not sure exactly what he means, but somehow he collapses all the 7 days of Pesach into one moment of time, so to speak, one unit of time. And if you found it immediately after Pesach, you assume that it was there from before that unit of time, which means before Pesach. And then we're going to have to assume that it came from Yisrael. Avolim efshel litlos shenofel achar Pesach. Let's say, for example, a week past since Pesach, and therefore we assume it was baked a week ago during Pesach. Or, for example, you could see right after Pesach that it's a brand new piece of bread, it just came fresh out of the bakery. In all those cases, you have every reason to assume that even though most of the occupants of that city are Jewish, it fell from those minority goyim that are in the city, and therefore it's mutter even bachi. Okay. That's as far as Siman Tov Mem Tes is concerned. And if you thought that was complicated, well, hold on to your hats. Because now we get into the real complicated stuff, and that's Tov Nun. Now, I was thinking of skipping Tov Nun, but I don't like to always chicken out, or chametz out, and take the easy way out. So let's give it a shot. We have what's called a halvah. Halva means a loan. Now, in the case of a loan, very often we have what's called a mashkon, otherwise known as a collateral. Now, you and I would think that, you know, for a collateral you would take a diamond ring, or if it's, well, it depends on how valuable the loan is. But there is a case where you could take as collateral a piece of chametz. You know, let's always come back to my example. I guess you're bored stiff with this example of a bottle of whiskey. And if the bottle of whiskey is, you know, a special blended whiskey and it's chametz,
it might be well fitted or something.
Right, it might be worth a lot of money. So the question is, if, let's say, a guy would borrow money from a Jew and give a bottle of chametzik of whiskey of value to the Jew as a mashkon, is a Jew allowed to hold on to that mashkon during Pesach? He doesn't own the mashkon, technically.
Yeah, but he has a lien on it.
But he has a lien on it, right?
He's
as a sheep.
Enough from it, no?
Right. Yeah. So maybe he owns the chametz, and then he's in deep trouble, because if you hold what's called balchovko to mashkon...
He really doesn't want that whiskey. He wants his money back.
Right, but right now he really wants that whiskey to be alive and well. I'll tell you why, because if he loses that whiskey, he loses the chov. And by the way, that might even apply if the chov is worth tons more than the whiskey. Because when I give you a collateral, I'm allowed to say to you, I'm not paying you back until you return the collateral to me. So again, there are different types of mashkons, and to learn the sugya mashko, we'd have to be here for a couple of months, but assuming that there is such a mashkon that's worth a fraction of the halvah, you can imagine how much vested interest the Yisrael has in keeping that mashkon alive and well, because if he loses that bottle of whiskey, he's going to take a loss of who knows how much money. Now, in addition to that, if that's not complicated enough, we have another case, another scenario, in which a Yisrael could actually borrow, not as collateral, but actually borrow a piece of chametz. Okay, now when you borrow chametz, are you going to return that chametz? So what did you gain out of it? L'chor, are you going to return its value? Correct? So take a look at the Mechaber in Tofnun, and he says the following: Yisrael shall love a kikar michavero kodem ha-pesach, tzorech lefaro achar ha-pesach. Now, this is wild. What happens here? First, he has the case of two Jews. One Jew lends chametz to his friend. We're not sure of all the terms of the agreement. We'll have to go through the Mishnah Berurah carefully to see what the terms of the agreement are. But just right now, let's take it on a very conceptual basis. The Yisrael is holding on to the chametz that he has to return to another Jew. And he took this chametz before Pesach, hoping that he would return it before Pesach. But for whatever reason, he didn't get a chance to return it before Pesach. Now, after Pesach, he doesn't want to own this chametz, right? So then, what's he going to do with the chametz? If on the one hand, he returns it to the Israel, then he's admitting that he was holding on to this chametz the whole Pesach, and he had vested interest in its existence so that he could return it after Pesach. And so on the other hand, he can consider it as if it's a non-entity, you know, I don't want this chametz, then what's the status of this chametz? Now, the life gets more complicated because we had before a discussion about chametz she'avel of a Pesach. Now, chametz she'avel of a Pesach is not worth anything. So imagine if Reuven takes chametz from Shimon and now he returns before Pesach and he returns it after Pesach. What is he giving Shimon? He's giving Shimon something that's valuable. Does he have a right to say, well, look, this is what I borrowed from you and this is what I'm giving back to you. It's the same exact entity, physically, it's intact. Or does Shimon have a right to say, you're not giving me back anything of value? And the Mechaber says, Yeshbo Mishum Gezel im Eino Poro. If he doesn't return this chametz, it's like he's stealing Shimon's chametz. If Reuven doesn't return it, now you and I would say, what do you mean return it? What is he returning? He's returning chametz. What's Shimon going to do with that chametz? It's chametz that was in the possession of Yisrael over Pesach. It's chametz over the Pesach, which is also Rakhid and also Vanna. So basically, just to confuse you and myself, we don't know what's going on here in this machaber. The whole scenario is very, very strange. And certainly the idea of Gezel, if he doesn't return the chametz,
he has it as a collateral, you're saying.
No, I'm not saying that. I just was going through the many. You keep in mind, this siman is a very long siman. Oh man, I didn't realize how long it was. This goes on for about 5 pages, correct? So one of the various examples we're going to give here is mashkon, you know, the din of a collateral. But I just was giving you a general introduction. The actual case that we're dealing with is called lava mimenu chametz, lava mimenu kikar. That means on Erev Pesach, he took a kikar. Let's take a look at the Mishnah Berurah and see if he fleshes it out a little bit for us. You have Sif Katan Aleph?
Yeah.
Okay. He says the fine, Rotzel Lomar. So bear with me on this because I had trouble. But let's see if we can survive it. Okay. And again, you know, I think after this we'll go back to a discussion about Hechsher Kalev. I don't know. It may be I think it may be worth that while. I don't know, give me till tomorrow to decide, if you don't mind. He says the following: Afilu lova mimenu kikar zebi erev pesach somuch lizmana biur shim lo hilvo belavachi hayetzorach levaro v'im lo biro hayeneser bano afal pichain tzorach lahatzlo kikar achar pesach shari yakol ponim lova mimenu b'shas heter v'yosha yechomitz moment gom. Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah wants to know the following: when did this halva take place? When did Shimon give over his chametz over to Reuven? If this happened after Shas Isur, which is called the sixth hour, then we have a problem here, because at that very moment he had a chiv biur, he had to destroy the chametz. I'm talking about Shimon, the owner of the chametz. And if we crossed over that line of the sixth hour before the halva took place, then at that point, since it's a chiyuv biur, and Shimon did not fulfill his chiyuv biur, because he had the possession of the chametz, he only gave it over to Reuven after the Shas Isur. At that moment of Shas Isur, since Shimon was in possession of the chametz, it automatically becomes Osur Banah. And if it becomes Osir Banah in the hands of Shimon, it doesn't make sense that Reuven would now have to return this chametz, because it already became Osir Banah in the hands of Shimon. Therefore, by process of elimination, we have to assume that the scenario addressed here by the Mechaber is a case where on Erev Pesach the halva already took place. So Shimon already transferred the chametz over to Reuven. So Shimon has no chiyuv biur, because he doesn't have the chametz in his possession. It's now in the possession of Reuven. So again, you're going to have to give me a few minutes, because until I know what's going on, No. It's very complicated. I'm trying to work it out. So give me just a few minutes, and then the floor is yours. What's going on here? Says the Mishnah Berurah, Lava mimenu kikar zeh b'erev Pesach. Let's underline the words Erev Pesach. Because what? If it was on Pesach, or shall we say after the fifth hour of Pesach, in the sixth hour, is then Belav Hachi Tzorach Levaro. Shimon is holding on to this chametz, and he has a chiyuv biur, correct? So if he passed that moment, which is the moment of biur, in lo biro, if he didn't destroy it, he gave it over to someone else, Nesar Bahano. So again, the premise here is, and we've discussed this in the past, that chametz in the possession of a Jew at the time of the Isur chametz becomes osur banah. And if that be the case, that's not relevant to our discussion. Why? Because then the chametz is valueless. So to talk about a chiyuv of piron to pay back for something that's valueless, right, if assuming at the time of the halva it was already after the Shas Isur. Now, let's assume the opposite. Let's assume that the Shas Halva was on Erev Pesach Samuch, which means Kodem Lizman Abir. So before the 11th hour, the halva took place. Oh. So now what happens as far as Piron is concerned? He says, "Afal pichein tzorach lahachzir lo kikar acher acher pesach." So first of all, we want to underline the word acher. That's important. Sharei al kol panim lava mimenu b'shas heter, which means that at the moment that Reuven received this chametz from Shimon, it was mutter. So Shimon therefore took, Reuven took from Shimon something of value. The chametz was at that point that he got into his hands something of value. Whatever that value is, in abstract terms, Reuven took it upon himself to return that value. So there's an amazing chiddush here. And that is that when I lend you something, and you have to return it, then if you cannot return the object itself, you return its value. In other words, we look at this object not in terms of the physical makeup of the object, but in terms of its representation of a certain abstract value, what we call shavus. V'oz, when Reuven received this chametz, hayah mamon gomor, shayah dayin kodem zman biur. And since it was Kodem Zman beer, therefore Reuven received from Shimon something of value. So let's say that the whiskey bottle that he received from Shimon was worth $250. Now he's going to have to return something of $250. Kosvach Ronim, the afiluim of our Yisrael halove vehisha chometz ad achra Pesach. So now the love, that's Reuven who borrowed this object, and at the time that he borrowed it was heter, but now it's isur. So by maintaining ownership over the chometz, it became us. So that's called chometz she'avol of a Pesach. Mikol makom, we're moving on to page 69 here on Lamed Hey. Sarach l'shalom, he still has to pay its value. The law, I mean, we're not going to say shlo ha'yochal amal v'lekabel domov, that the malver, that's Reuven, could not have received the value of his chametz mishum chalipe chametz, right? Because there's something called chalipe chametz, means money that was used to buy chametz or to replace chametz. The ein zeh chalipe chametz. Shekevan shalova kika hareu shalo v'elo lamalva olav eladomim bi'alma.
What does chametz have to? It has a chametz is just a collateral, right? Just like it, why the rules change other than what do you do with the chametz when Pesach comes around?
He's saying the following: that if you got this chametz before Pesach, then you have an obligation to return this chametz, or at least its value. Right, because at the time you got it was valuable.
And he's
saying now that although it became chometz avol of a Pesach, and therefore the chometz became valueless, but your original chiyuv that you took upon yourself...
Who's the cause of it becoming valueless?
Pesach, right? The beginning of Pesach.
Since it's in my possession, I'm responsible to do something with it. Sell it or whatever it is.
And you didn't do so, so therefore it became chometz avol of a Pesach.
Then it's your problem.
I don't know who the you is. Again, we're talking about the malva or the lova.
You're the one who received that
comment. The lova, right. So the lova has now a headache. Why? Because he cannot claim, you know what? I never received anything of value for you. That's a ridiculous claim, because at the time that he received it, it had value. He cannot claim, B, I don't have to return this chometz to you because it's valueless. It's chometz shavu l'pesach. No. You accepted upon yourself not only to return the chametz, but in event that the chametz is not around, to return its value.
Right.
And therefore, you're going to have to dig into your pocket and return it. If not, you're a gazel. So Yisrael shehil v'chametz li'akum l'fnei Pesach. Oh, this is the case of a guy. Okay.
This is when the mashkan has been lost.
Well, it's not exactly lost.
Well, it's
valueless because it's chometz shavu l'pesach.
The transaction took place after the sixth hour. That was the case.
Right. Since the transaction took place before the sixth hour, now it became, you know, it's in the possession of the lova, meaning of Shimon in this case. We called Shimon the lova. At that point, it becomes chometz shavu l'pesach.
Did it become chometz shavu l'pesach because he was sloppy about it?
Yeah.
Or he just didn't have time to sell it to a guy?
Well, I think it doesn't matter one way or the other, because if you remember, we had a discussion that chometz shavu l'pesach applies to any chometz that's owned by a Jew. Even if he didn't have time to get rid of it, that doesn't alleviate...
That's not
a mitigating...
Absolve him of the...
Din of chometz shavu l'pesach. Right. Now... I was just trying to figure out here. Just give me a minute to see if he clarifies anything. So again, I'm a little bit confused about the lashon of the mechaber. I'm assuming that he's going to have to buy him a different bottle of whiskey, because this bottle of whiskey is Aser Ba'Noach. I hope that's a fair assumption. I was hoping that the Mishnah Berurah, one of the Mefarshim, would spell that out.
Is it mashma? I know we're going to hear about one bottle of whiskey, but with metaltilim, it's mashma, then you make a mashkon, the physical possession of it is transferred, as opposed to it, like a land, where the mashkon remains with the original person, but the person has a, so to speak, contractual right to it.
You're not asking about chametz. I mean, chametz is clearly metaltal. You're asking a general question about
where it would be, because that would have an effect as to whether it would be, whose possession. You say possession,
right? There's possession of
physical
chametz,
possession, and then there is actual legal possession,
right?
And is that not going to make a legal possession? Presumably, if I'm keeping chametz of mine in your machzor, it's my chametz,
right? Well, let's see if we can figure out the next case here. Yisrael shehilva chametz li'akum lifnei ha-pesach l'shilo chametz kayosuv li'akum ha-pesach. What happens in a case where a Jew gives chametz over to a guy before Pesach? That's fine. Mm-hmm. Except the only thing is that he receives that chametz in return after Pesach. So the question is he receiving the original bottle of whiskey? Why did he give it to the guy before Pesach? Obviously, he's getting a replacement of the bottle. So the original bottle of whiskey is gone. And the second bottle of whiskey is now a replacement for the first bottle of whiskey. Now, who owned the first bottle of whiskey, the Jew or the guy? The Jew owned it, do you remember? And he gave it over to the guy. Now the guy has to return another bottle of whiskey to replace the first bottle of whiskey, but that second bottle is a result of the first bottle, and the first bottle of whiskey was owned by the Jew. He says the following: since he's not giving back the original chametz, but rather he's giving back a substitute chametz, mutar, meaning the Yisrael is allowed to receive this chametz after Pesach and do whatever he wants with it. That if, let's say, for example, the guy never used this chametz for whatever reason and just returns the original bottle, then it's also because who owned the chametz? It was the Yisrael who owned the chametz.
Did he? It was the guy who owned it. You gave it to the guy. He didn't want to use it. That was his prerogative.
But who actually owns the whiskey now? At this point, we're assuming the Jew owns the whiskey.
This is my whole point. No. To me, ownership hasn't transferred.
Yes. Right, so far...
Yes, it has.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Mel is going to... You're going to be the pre-Chodesh, but we're not up to the pre-Chodesh. Mel is giving us the pre-Chodesh.
I didn't know that, but...
He's before the pre-Chodesh. Yeah. But just let's understand, before we get to Mel's Svara, and that's what I think, Yitzhak, you were pointing out over here, that legally... the chametz belongs to the Yisrael. Yeah, before we get to the pre-chametz.
Right.
He's only giving it to him as, in my end of the case, as a mashkon.
I don't know exactly mashkon. He's giving him as a loan in such a case that he expects to get it back. Now, if he doesn't get it back, he'll get back a different bottle.
It's definitely a security in respect of the overall loan.
He's not giving it to him as a loan. He's giving it to him to use.
Yeah.
I decided afterwards not to you.
That's my question. Is he giving it to you? Because that usually a mashkon is just a lien on a legal right to it.
So I'll tell you this, look, I think by introducing mashkon here, and I clap al chet, I didn't even mention that word, we're only going to get confused. The word we want to use here is the halva. The mashkon is a much more complicated case.
So it's a different case.
It's a different case. So I just think that the word mashkon is going to just derail us. What we want to know is in a case of halva, where in this case we'll call him Yankel gives a bottle of whiskey over to John Paul Jones. What's the status of that bottle of whiskey right now? Yeah, before the pre-chadosh, we're saying is the following: since the Jew has rights to get back his bottle, if it still exists, that means it's still his. So if the bottle of whiskey has not been consumed, the guy, John Paul Jones, has no right to substitute a different bottle for this bottle. Comes along the pre-chadosh, now we'll read the pre-chadosh, but Cholek al said, he rejects that. He says, what are you telling me? That this chametz is also when he gets it back from the guy? Lo mikri chametz shalva pesach, this is not called chametz shalva pesach. Who had possession over the chametz? The guy, right? The Jew gave over the chametz to the guy before Pesach. Shrei ad ato yeshayach li'akum. It really belongs to the guy. The kevet shelvo, once he lent this object, namely the whiskey bottle, over to the guy, kam leber shusei. The pre-chadosh says it now goes into the ownership of the guy. Then there's no chametz shalva pesach because it wasn't owned by a Jew, but rather it was owned by a guy. Unfortunately, the Mishnah Berurah, and again, this doesn't always shock us, he takes the high road here, the chumradikar road. He says, Lamaisa, he says, Yesh la'achmin kidei ha-maisa. Why? The michse kechomet shal Yisrael shavu lev ha-pesach. In other words, the Jewish community looks at that whiskey, or any particular member of the Jewish community, and he considers that if it belongs to the Jew, haraya, the Jew got it back. He got back after Pesach the very same bottle. So that's not a mechira. A mechira means when we buy back the chametz. In this case, we're not buying it back from the guy. There's no new kinyan that's going to be effectuated to get the whiskey back. The guy has no choice but to return that bottle. And if that be the case to the spectator, it looks like the Jew gave over his bottle and now he gets it back. It was his the whole time.
Why would the guy just take the bottle to give back the same bottle?
You're giving
him schnapps.
He didn't need it. All of a sudden, his uncle died and brought him a massive amount of whiskey. So it happened to be that this whiskey he didn't use. You know, he should have used it. That was the assumption was given under. Correct. So the Pichari says that the assumption was the guy would use it for his purposes, therefore it belongs to the guy. He's allowed to use it, he's allowed to drink it, he'll pay its value or give back another
bottle. If he decides not to use it, give you the same bottle back, so what?
So again, so the first verse says it looks like it's the chametz of the Yisrael, which he, so to speak, deposited in the hands of the guy, and he got it back. Again, technically the guy really owns the chametz, but it looks like the Yisrael owns the chametz. You know, we work in halacha with what's called Maris Ayin kind of halachas, meaning how does it look to the outside world? And he says the following, michsi. Do you see that word michsi? If it was your Mishnah Berurah, I would insist that you highlight the word michsi. Michsi kechomet shal Yisrael sha'avar lev ha-pesach. Why? Kevet shehichsir oso chomets gufa. Since he returned to the Jew, the same chomets that he got from the Jew a week ago, it looks like it was always the Jew's. And if you go through a process of mechira, and you sign a document, and then after Pesach you have to go through another transaction to get it back, that's one thing. But if you just get back the same bottle, and there's no kinyan, you know, you don't have to make a new kinyan, then at least in the eyes of the spectator, that's called michsi, it looks like chametz sha'avar lev ha-pesach. Let's just see, I'll only hold you for another 2 or 3 minutes, let's see if we can... if we can finish up at least this Sif Aleph. The Mechaber says, "Im eino poro," since the Jew in this case is obliged to return the bottle of whiskey or pay its value, if he doesn't do so, he's going to be considered a gazlan. Therefore, it's a problem of chametz sha'avar lev ha-pesach. Now, at this point, the Mishnah Berurah wants to introduce another variable into the equation, and that's called ribis. Now, what's the deal with ribis over here? After all, he's giving him back, you know, the value of the kikar. So, this is a famous principle called sa' b'sa'. And I'm afraid to even mention it to you, because you know the rule called mutav shiyushogeg him? You're not familiar with that?
No.
I'm about to violate that rule, so I shouldn't teach it to you. But the rule is that if people are shogeg him, they don't know the law, and they violate it, it's better off not knowing. Better off not knowing, right? So have you ever borrowed a dozen eggs from somebody?
Possibly.
Okay, do you ever borrow a half of those eggs?
Yeah,
all of a sudden,
at least the next,
you know,
egg and sugar, yeah.
All right, have you ever borrowed sugar from someone, right?
Yeah.
So that's a serious issue.
To borrow?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, because
it's called sabisa. What does that mean, sabisa?
When you return it, but you already had the pleasure of
having more than that. The market value fluctuates. So let's say on Tuesday I borrowed a pound of potatoes from you. So on the market it was worth 60, right? 60 per pound. On Wednesday, when you return that money, that,
worth
that
62,
right, it's worth 62. So although it's not ribis ketsusa doraisa, but it's ribis derabanan. The rabbanan prohibited because at the end of the day, he's getting back more than what you gave him. Again, this all assumes inflation, that it went up in value. And that's what we saw.
If you're looking at the value, but he's getting the same potato.
In every month, so, what would Mark Pinter say? Have it, not borrow it. You don't have to return.
So maybe that's going to avoid the issue of Sabasar. But Sabasar is very issue. So the question is, that's what the Mishnah Berurah wants to address here. If you're going to return that bottle of whiskey that you borrowed, that's an issue of ribis. So he says that this is not ribis. Why? He says, Leka bekikros, mishud achiluku bedover muad, al piro velo kapti inshi bazeh. So again, you really have to know a lot about sabasar. The trouble is you have to know everything to know anything here. But there's something called a davar muat. Now exactly what that means, a davar muat, I don't know. But if it's less than a pruta, then we apply the principle of lo kapti inshi. He's applying it, l'chora, even if it's more than a pruta. But relative to the value of the whiskey bottle, it's a davar muat. You follow what I mean? In percentage points, in terms of how much the whiskey, let's say, was inflated, how much it went up and increased in value, it's such a small percentage that people are not makpid on such a thing. But, all right, I'm both saying this requires a lot more.
If it went the other way, right? If it went down in value. Right, it went down in value. Do I now have to
make up the difference? That's also an issue. That's not a ribis issue, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
Since I borrowed X, do I have to pay you back something that's valued at X? Or can I say, I borrowed potatoes, I'm giving you back potatoes?
All I want back are potatoes. I don't care. I don't look at value when that happens.
Right. So maybe it goes in both directions. But technically, there's no issue if it goes down in value because I'm giving you back exactly what you borrowed. But if it went up in value, then you're making a profit on it.
And if that goes down in value,
and that might be a ribis.
You have to give me an extra quarter of a potato.
Right.
But it's
right, but having to give you an extra quarter of a potato is not relevant because, again, the value I only have to pay you in event that I can't give you back the original object. So if I give you back the original object, you're stuck with that. If it went down in value, that's your problem. In fact, the Gemara is going to tell us, which is amazing, that if, let's say, I give you back chametz after Pesach, in certain cases, I'm allowed to say, Hareshel Cholofanecha, as I'm giving you back exactly what you gave me, even if it's not worth anything at all. So it's interesting. Let's say I steal, Goslin steals your chametz before Pesach, and then after Pesach, he gives it back to you, and he says, Hareshel Cholofanecha. This is what I stole, and this is what I'm returning. The only problem is it's worthless.
You can't use it, you have to burn it.
So the Chiyuv Damim only applies after the ban is gone, but if the ban is still existing, you can say, Arishal Cholofanech. So we'll stop here. I'll make a note of where we got up to, and then we'll decide. You'll have to leave it to me, to my discretion.
You decide. We don't decide.
Yeah, I'll have to decide because, again, these issues get very, very. You know, we didn't even scratch the surface of this thing. Does anybody have a pencil by any chance? I just want to make a note.
No, I don't.
No pencil.
No? All right, so we'll figure this out. We'll sort this all out.